WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
CBS News. Police rescued drivers in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. This woman got stuck in Westchester County, New York, when heavy rain triggered flash floods throughout the tri-state region.
Within like 15, 20 minutes, it went from maybe just a little stream of water, and then it just started flooding over.
New flash floodings held up the search for about 160 people still missing after July 4th's flash flooding in central Texas. CBS's Jason Allen in hard-hit Kerrville.
The Kerr County Sheriff said that they are going to be working hard out here for at least another month or two, but they could be searching for victims for the next 6 months.
President Trump spoken to the BBC about his threat to slap 100% tariffs on countries that buy Russian oil if Vladimir Putin doesn't reach a ceasefire with Ukraine within 50 days.
Do you trust him?
I trust almost nobody. To be honest with you.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
WAUK News brought to you by the Summer Splash Dog Show at the Waukesha County Fairgrounds, July 25th to July 27th. Fun for the whole family. WaukeshaSummerSplash.com.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Shali Pittman. Two Milwaukee parents are facing felony charges after their four-year-old son was fatally shot. The father is charged with first-degree intentional homicide, while his mother faces charges of child neglect resulting in death and the purchase of an illegal firearm. Police say the shooting happened inside the family's home. The couple's 10-year-old son told investigators the father had a history of domestic violence and had made threats earlier that day. Both parents appeared in court yesterday. A recent study finds a link between a state's weak gun laws and firearm deaths for kids. The study was published last month in the pediatrics edition of the Journal of the American Medical Association. It looked at gun-related deaths for kids and teens from 2010 to 2023. Researchers compared states based on the strictness of their gun laws. They picked the year 2010 after a Supreme Court ruling that year expanded gun rights in some states. They found that states with weaker gun laws, like Wisconsin, saw an increase in firearm deaths for youth. States with stricter laws saw those deaths stay the same or go down. Democrats and their allies are taking another shot to redraw Wisconsin's congressional maps ahead of midterms next year. That's after the state Supreme Court recently tossed a similar challenge without giving an explanation. The Wisconsin Examiner reports that a new lawsuit is being filed in Dane County. It argues the current congressional maps are an unconstitutional gerrymander. If successful, the case could improve Democrats' chances to unseat two Republicans, Representatives Derek Van Orden and Brian Stile, who represents Racine, Kenosha, and Southeast Wisconsin. And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Shali Pittman.
The Brewers add more players. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. The Brewers have wrapped up their picks in the Major League Baseball draft. Milwaukee adding 22 new players to the organization, 8 position players, and 14 pitchers. The All-Star game is tonight in Atlanta. The Brewers' Freddy Peralta there along with closer Trevor McGill.
I'm pretty fired up, that's for damn sure. Just happy to be around this clubhouse, you know, and great group of guys to enjoy this with, that's for damn sure.
I asked rookie pitcher Jacob Mizorowski what was his favorite All-Star game to watch growing up. The Miz says it was the one he saw in person back in 2012 in his hometown at the age of 10.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the one in Kansas City. What, that would have been 12? 12, there you go. I remember going to that and seeing that, and I thought it was the coolest thing that all the big stars were in one place. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting.
That's Brewers rookie pitcher Jacob Mizorowski with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be sunny and humid today. Our high in the mid-80s this afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear. We'll drop to around 71. And then tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sun with scattered showers and thunderstorms tomorrow. And tomorrow night, our high tomorrow in the low 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 64.
Bring the whole family to the Waukesha Kennel Club's Summer Splash Dog Shows at the Waukesha County Fairgrounds, July 25th to 27th. Enjoy exciting events like dock diving, fast cat racing, obedience, and the thrilling best of show competition. It's fun for all ages. Check out the vendors and find the best pet supplies for your furry friends. It's the perfect weekend for dog lovers and families alike. Sponsored by Royal Canin at 540 AM WAUK. Visit WaukeshaSummerSplash.com for all the details.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The big brutal bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right. in the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome comedian and host of the 40-Year-Old Boy podcast, Mike Schmidt. Then local rock duo, 7,000 Apart, joins me to rock the studio. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 7:06. It is nice to have you here on this Tuesday morning, July 15th, 2025. Parker Olson produces this fine show, and he is standing by in Madison Studio A2. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot will be along in just a sec, followed by State Senator Jamie Wall from the Green Bay area. We talked to State Representative Ahmad Rivera-Wagner yesterday from the Green Bay area, and we talked about the state budget. It was, of course, a very bipartisan affair with Republicans and Democrats voting yes and no for various reasons. Representative Rivera-Wagner was a no and explained why. Senator Wall was a yes and tells us about the positive things that were in the budget. That's coming up in just a bit. But first, let's check in with meteorologist Brittany Merlot for what appears to be one very hot, sticky day. This is like a Nashville chicken hot honey kind of day. It's that much heat and stickiness bringing to the day, right?
Yeah. I like the way you put it. It adds a little glaze to the situation.
Yeah, everybody's going to have a little glaze when they come in from outdoors.
Tasty.
Hopefully without the pickles. I'm not a pickle guy. I don't order the Nashville stuff because they throw pickles on it. So give me the hot honey chicken. I don't need the pickles. But
the pickles do throw it off just a little bit, in my opinion, as well. I agree.
And frankly, if there were pickles in the weather, you know, that would be another thing too. But instead,
that would be terrifying.
It would be terrifying. Instead,
raining pickles.
Raining pickles. Hallelujah. No, it's not like that at all. It's just going to be steamy and sticky, Brittany.
It sure is. Yeah, it's a very, very hot one. We're looking at temperatures pretty much near 90 across the state, mid-80s. Absolutely. That's what you're hitting today. Plus the humidity on top of that, the heat index is really going to be feeling more like those mid-90s for a lot of us, low 90s for some of us. I mean, this morning it's already 75 degrees in Siren. And then, of course, you go by Lake Superior, it's about 63 degrees. So we're already starting off with a mild morning. We've got a ton of sunshine out there. There's only a few clouds far, far northwest up towards Lake Superior area. Those are going to start to build and spread a little bit more in towards the state, but staying into the northwestern parts of the corner because we've got a front that is just lining up there and stalling there tonight. But then by tomorrow, this low pressure system starts to push down south and it kind of swings some storms and some heavy rainfall as we go into our Wednesday for the rest of the state. So we've got a wet section of the week ahead, but today is definitely going to be a hot and dry one.
Or as Rob puts it from Tigerton, Louisiana swamp weather in Wisconsin today.
Mosquitoes everywhere.
Yep. Good morning from Tigerton, Rob says. It's sunny, hazy, 68. Yesterday I mowed 4 yards in the Wittenberg area. Took an hour lunch at Brianna's in Wittenberg to enjoy the air conditioning. Yeah. Today I've got a mow in Tigerton. I had to stock up on lots of Gatorade just to stay hydrated. It's like Rob knows exactly what Brittany's going to say. And if Greg Bach would burst through that wall like the Kool-Aid man right now, if he could, tell Rob to stay hydrated. And Rob goes on to say, I really appreciate the people that work in the field to teach people with developmental disabilities because I was on the receiving end of their services and appreciated their help on this Developmentally Disabled Professionals Appreciation Day. So again, thanks to all those folks for all that you do.
Absolutely.
Not as smoky, thankfully, from the Canadian wildfires. The discomfort is just all ours. It's just the natural discomfort that we feel instead
much.
In there.
Let's go from one to the other, though, you know. Yep.
But it's I was mentioning moment. How yesterday it was, you know, hot and a lot of folks were on the lake. Either they were vacationing or just, you know, some of the local kids on summer vacation. But there were a lot of people that said, let's just get on the jet ski or any boat and anything that gets the water churning and puts a little moisture up there. Not the kind that you sweat in, but the kind that makes you feel better, you know?
The refreshing kind, yes.
The refreshing kind, yes. Yeah. So
a sprinkler.
I expect it's going to be another noisy one on the lake today. Thank you, Brittany. We'll check back with you in an hour.
Sounds good.
As always, a reminder that you can sign up for our daily newsletters at Up North News, a separate entity from Civic Media, but so happy to have this morning partnership every weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. You can sign up for our newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. Again, upnorthnewswi. Don't forget the wi.com, and we'd love to have you as a subscriber. Among the things that we also have are a Sunday newsletter that I put together, Sunday Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, all about Wisconsin politics. And I have to say that our question of the week has really tapped into something lately. And it isn't all about Zoran Mamdani, the Democratic nominee who is the next mayor apparent in New York City, but AOC from New York City, Bernie Sanders, certainly other folks, there are people in our legislature now who describe themselves as democratic socialists. And for some people, that is really off-putting, feeling like they are going to turn off all the moderates and it's going to cost Democrats elections. And there are plenty of others who go, no, 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 this is what we needed. This is a breath of fresh air. No squeamish Democrats. These are folks that are saying, look, these are our values. This is what we absolutely want to do. And then there are those in the middle that say, hey, there's room for both. There's room for centrists. There's room for people who describe themselves as democratic socialists or far left, whatever you want to call it. And so we asked, what's your opinion on this? Now, I haven't tallied up the results fully yet, but I bring this up because it really did bring in a lot of responses right away all over the place. I mean, if you just go by the A, B, C, or D, and I'll tell you the D answer in a minute here. They are all over the place. There is, here's Don here, who votes for the big tent, There's Room for All, where he says, we need to have room for an open discussion of issues. Let's see, there's one here that also says big tent, but Liz says, Dems must have a coherent, simple, values-based message, not just anti-Trump. After all, Mamdani won on the topic of affordable housing. And then there's C, who says, nope, option C is, nope, don't go too far to the left. Dawn says, let us not forget past losses due to far-left idealism, a.k.a. Bernie Sanders. And so on it goes. So we'd love to know your opinion. You can be a subscriber to our Sunday newsletter simply by heading to upnorthnewswi.com and click subscribe in the top banner. Or if you just want to weigh in on this question, send us a note. Radio@upnorthnewswi.com is our email address. Again, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Or, of course, if you're watching us on Facebook or YouTube, just put a little something in the comment section right there. All right, State Senator Jamie Wall joins us now from the Green Bay area. We'll talk about the state budget and more. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Hey, nice to have you here. Let's just get right into the way that I started off the segment here, saying that for the state budget bill that passed last week, there were both Democratic and Republican votes, both for and against, for various reasons. You came down on the side of voting yes, although you were quick to add in your statement that hardly makes this a perfect document. Tell us why in the end you came down on the side of voting for it.
Sure. Well, look, this was not the budget I would have written, but you don't get everything you want in life all the time. And, you know, fundamentally, if you want a budget that's going to reflect the priorities of the Democratic Party, you need to have Democrats in the majority in the legislature. And we don't have that. But we found ourselves, or I found myself as a Democrat in the Senate with some unexpected leverage, because it turns out that the Republicans in the Senate are internally divided and were not able to come together around a plan of their own. Okay. So that left us with a couple options. We could have thrown up our hands and walked away and said, this is not the budget we would have written, or we could do what we did, which was come to the table and make it better. One thing that really influenced my thinking was that the state would have lost more than $1 billion in federal Medicaid funding if we hadn't been able to beat the Trump budget to the punch. That's why you saw Governor Evers signing the budget in the middle of the night. And I've gotten an education in my brief time in the legislature from people who depend on the Medicaid program. I mean, it's not just folks that don't have a lot of means. It's seniors in nursing homes who've exhausted all their other income. It's kids with disabilities and their parents. I mean, it's rare that I run into a family like that where one of them doesn't pull me aside and say, look, my kid is on Katie Beckett or some other Medicaid program, and I really would appreciate it if you go to bat for us. And I took that seriously. So in my mind, the alternatives were worse. It was either that we were going to walk away and have no budget at all, which is basically what we have minus the good things that we were able to get in there, or that they were going to, the Republicans were going to get organized and pass some hard right document that catered to the most extreme members. And neither of those were a win. So I took the wins in front of us, and I think that was the right thing to do.
Do you feel like, without getting everything that you wanted, because again, that's part of what politics is, and sure, the governor certainly knows that as well, those things that didn't happen, do they basically just become the platform that you run on and that Democrats run on in 2026, is to say, look, these things weren't in, you vote for us, this is what's going to come next time around? Or do you look at other factors and you don't worry about what didn't make it into the budget?
Well, look, there were a lot of good things in the budget that we were able to improve. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that we saved the state's childcare industry from a crisis. Governor Evers had used some federal money to help prop up our daycare centers through the pandemic. Those funds were expiring. We had surveys that told us that maybe a quarter of all the daycare centers in the state were going to go out of business, and think of the impact that has on kids and their families, really in the Wisconsin workforce. This is the best budget for the UW system in a generation. And we were, you know, in the middle of conversations about whether we would need to close four-year colleges, and now we are emphatically not in that territory, and that's a win for the students and, again, the future workforce of our state. The one area in which I wish we could have done more was K-12 education. We actually put record increases in special education funding in the budget, because that's what every school district administrator in the state had told us to do. Half $1 billion doesn't go as far as you think across the state, and some school boards are going to be facing tough choices as a result of this. So that's at the top of my list for something we need to do better at next time, by our kids and, you know, by our property taxpayers as well, because if districts go to referendum, what they're doing is transferring school funding down into the local property tax levy instead of onto the state tax base, which is bigger and more diverse.
All right. And then finally, now that the budget is passed, what else would you like to get accomplished in upcoming sessions, either this fall or early next year before the next round of elections?
Look, what I heard from my voters last year in the campaign and the last 6 months in office is that they're concerned about the cost of living. So I'm focused myself on a number of bills that are going to help with that. We'll be rolling out one in a couple of weeks now that is going to help school districts and their health insurance costs. I've got several others that pertain to different ways to make housing more affordable. My gosh, you know, Green Bay is not Manhattan or even Madison in terms of housing costs, but we were, I think, seventh in the country last year in how much our costs increased here, and people have sure noticed. So there are different levers there with the building code, with zoning, with giving local governments a few more tools that they can use to promote housing development. So that's one area I'm focused on.
It's interesting that Josh Shulman, the Washington County executive candidate for governor, we played back an interview from him last hour, and he too cited affordable the cost of housing. So it's clearly something that everybody's aware of. the solutions are another matter, and I'm sure there'll be differences when we talk about that next time around. State Senator Jamie Wahl from Green Bay, thank you so much for the visit and the update on the budget bill. We appreciate it so much.
Hey, thanks for having me, Pat.
All right, Jamie, thank you again. A local update is next for some of you. Others will join me along with Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander, and later, Hans Breitenmoser. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, this is the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
I came walking in here just a moment ago, and there was a young lady sitting here with a chicken.
It's fantastic.
On the table.
Kaylee High from Staley Boyd High School. What's the line of bird?
So this is Sue. She's a Dominique, and she's 6 years old.
Is Sue here? Does she lay eggs?
She did used to. She's too old.
So chickens go through menopause?
Yes.
Aren't
they? Yeah,
really?
Much. Yeah, basically.
It's a post-menopausal chicken. My sisters can relate.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at mda75.org.
Matt Nair on Air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Mommy, how come I can't sit in the front seat?
Because I love you and you're just not ready yet.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. I'm Greg Bach, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. When it comes to the brave people in our military, we just want to say that we love them, respect them, support them. They are friends, families, and coworkers. So when I had the chance to talk to someone about Navy Week, which is taking place this week in Milwaukee, I jumped at the opportunity to talk to Lieutenant Jordan Diomedi, who is the lead planner of all this week's events, to give us the lowdown of what's happening in Milwaukee during this very special time. Lieutenant Diomedi, thank you so much for joining me today. I wanted to ask you about Navy Week in Milwaukee.
Yes, sir. We are excited to be bringing the Navy to the city of Milwaukee this year. It is our sixth time visiting the city. Last time we were here was in 2023. So it's been exciting for me as the lead planner of Milwaukee Navy Week to have been spending the past 4 months putting this week together, over 75 engagements across the city, reaching a variety of different organizations, from youth organizations to veterans organizations, even working with educational organizations as well. So it's definitely an exciting job to be a part of this and to be bringing sailors from across the fleet to the city of Milwaukee to really showcase our sailors, what they're doing around the world, around the clock. And ultimately, we want to inform, inspire, and educate the community of Milwaukee while we're here.
And you kind of answered my next question, is that the goal is really to introduce the thing you've dedicated your time to us here in Milwaukee and showing us all of the things that get done in the Navy, correct?
Absolutely. And so typically what we'll do is when we're bringing Navy Weeks to these cities, we're going to areas that don't have a significant Navy presence. So these are areas that are typically landlocked or they're surrounded by the Air Force or the Army, so they don't ever get that Navy exposure. So it's very important for us to be able to come here and bring these sailors with different job specialties and backgrounds to the city to talk about what they do, whether they're on an aircraft carrier or they're serving overseas. We have a variety of those sailors, including some of your very own hometown sailors from Milwaukee. We have our U.S. Navy Ceremonial Guard team coming all the way from D.C. We have sailors from the USS Constitution. That's our oldest active duty warship that's in the city talking history with the city of Milwaukee. So there's a lot going on this week, and we're excited to engage with the community while we're here.
And as you mentioned, there are events happening all week, all over the city, starting today, actually, at 8 a.m. Do you want to speak more about the Veterans Breakfast?
Absolutely. So we partner with the Milwaukee VA to be able to bring the Navy to the VA for a special Veterans Breakfast, where we will actually have our senior executive, Rear Admiral Matthew Pottenberg, as one of the guests. We're also going to be recognizing and welcoming home Vietnam veterans. This is a free breakfast. All are welcome to come. We really want to be able to engage with our veterans. We'll have the Navy Band from Great Lakes coming to join us, as well as a special performance from the U.S. Navy Ceremonial Guard. So you're not going to want to miss this if you can make it.
And as I mentioned, this is basically the start of it. There are events happening every day, twice a day, and it's really chock full of great stuff here. When I'm looking at your press release, I'm like, holy cow, there's a lot of fun things happening.
It really is. And so throughout the week, we have about over 75 different engagements across the city. And so that's volunteering with organizations like Revitalize Milwaukee, Hunger Task Force Farm, but also engaging with youth at Boys and Girls Clubs, the YMCAs, Journey House, Running Rebels. So we're really just getting the Navy out there to talk about us and what we do, Q&As, and also just participate in the fun activities that the youth gets to do in the summer. You know, for an entire week, these sailors get to come to the city and just have a good time. I don't pack their schedule completely full, because I really do want them to get out there and experience some time off, checking out some of the local eats and cheese curds and all yep. the amazing things that Milwaukee and Wisconsin have to offer us.
And I imagine for you, too, the schedule is grueling because, as you said, it's 4 months of planning. I have to imagine when it's done, when the last person has left, the door is closed, you're just going to kick back, maybe have some cheese curds for yourself. And is that then the start of, do you begin the process of, all right, what's happening for next year?
Yes. So that process is already being planned through for where we will be headed next year. But I'll tell you what, as a lead planner, that 4 months of planning to see it all play out and the entire week, from sailors who would have never really met each other to being able to build bonds and friendships, not only with other sailors, but members of the community, is very special for me to see. And also the organizations that we've been partnering with, everyone's been completely supportive. And we're just really excited for all the opportunities that we have here to share the good word about what the Navy is doing around the world and around the clock, especially because this year is our 250th birthday. So it's a very special time to be celebrating the U.S. Navy. So we're here to do it in Milwaukee this week.
If people want to find out more about the events happening, where would you like them to go?
So we recommend you go on to outreach.navy.mil. On there, there's a Navy Weeks tab. You can find Milwaukee, and all the public engagements are listed right there. We're going to be at Harley-Davidson Bike Nights Thursday evening. We have a special proclamation ceremony Thursday afternoon at 2 p.m. at the War Memorial. We'll be honoring and recognizing Vietnam veterans there as well, and a special ceremony to name it Milwaukee Navy Week from the mayor. So that's going to be awesome, and you'll get a chance to see the Navy Band, our color guard from the USS Constitution, and also our U.S. Navy Ceremonial Guard performing there as well. And then also, you can't miss us this weekend at the Air and Water Show. Not only do we have the prestigious Blue Angels flying in the show, but we'll also have a variety of Navy teams there to share what they do in the Navy and bringing some of their equipment out to show those in attendance.
Lieutenant Jordan Diomede, thank you so much for stopping by today. I appreciate you taking
Absolutely.
Your time. Folks, check out the website, go to one of these events, hang out with some folks who are giving their time to our country, and find out more about what the Navy does for us. Thank you so much for being here, Jordan. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Greg. Have a good one.
My very special thanks to Lieutenant Jordan Diomede for taking the time to come into the studio and talk to us about Navy Week. If you want more information on all the top events happening for Navy Week here in Milwaukee, go to outreach.navy.mil, and you can find the full schedule there.
And hey, we know your life is on the go and everyone's real busy nowadays, and you can't always take the time to listen to radio when it's live on the air. So you can listen to all of our shows by going to your podcast distribution center of choice and subscribing to our programs as a podcast. That way, when a new episode is available, it gets delivered directly to your device and you can listen to it whenever, wherever you'd like. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, I'm Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:29.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Well, the market had a bumpy ride on Monday, trying to figure out exactly what the newly announced tariffs may mean to agriculture exports. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a Tuesday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news, and no doubt the tariff back and forth is continuing, and it's really impacting not only agriculture economy, but also the U.S. economy as a whole. Ted McKinney is the CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. He says right now that imbalance has to be rectified, and he believes that production agriculture is ready for a bumpy ride if there's better balance in the end.
Clearly, negotiations cannot be a highly public thing. So if they come forward as we hope they are, and they will, then I think we're going to be better off recognizing that we're having this bumpy period. There's no doubt, and the president told us that. We hope to get past this. I am hearing that negotiations are occurring with China. We want some element of that market. I think we can get there, but it's all under wraps, and so hang on, and then we can talk again.
Ted McKinney, he is the CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. He also reminds agriculture that we're not seeking unfair trade that's overly beneficial to the United States, just looking for fair trade. Well, the market still seems to have an upset stomach about the potential for these tariffs. Markets lower in overnight trade. Numbers are next.
Wisconsin soybean growers have a lot of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
When hot weather strikes your cattle, milk production drops and feed intakes decrease. Summer heat also impacts the quality of your herd's reproduction. Protect your cows and grow your bottom line. Add BioVet's Bovine Goldlight to your cow's daily ration. Bovine Goldlight keeps the herd hydrated, maintains milk production, and keeps your breeding program in check. Learn more about Bovine Goldlight at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
On Monday, the barrel cheese dropped a half a cent to 167. 40-pound block cheese was down a penny and a half, 164 and a half, while AA butter dropped a penny, 258 a pound. The August Class 3 milk that goes into cheese is down 12 right now, 1731. December new crop corn's down a penny at 417. November new crop beans down a penny and a half at 1005. Right now, September wheat's down a penny and a half at 540 a bushel. Just a quick snapshot on where numbers stand so far on a Tuesday morning. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be sunny and humid today. Our high in the mid-80s this afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear. We'll drop to around 71. And then tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sun with scattered showers and thunderstorms tomorrow. And tomorrow night, our high tomorrow in the low 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 64.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The big Brutal Bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right in the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekday. 4 till 6 p.m. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Milwaukee film critic Mr. Matt Miller. I know you saw this. I saw 28 Years Later as well. I really liked it. My wife loved it, and we're not really horror people, but just something that grabbed. It's just great storytelling.
It is simultaneously what you would want from a zombie movie and something completely different. It's just a really fascinating movie and one I hope people keep checking out.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll be on our first leg of our tour with Jane and Greg at their home at Radio City Park in Racine, along with Sommers and Kringle. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Who is ready to do some road tripping with Matt Nair on Air and the Todd Albaugh Show? They will be hitting the road starting tomorrow with stops in Oshkosh, Butternut, and Hayward. So join them. Join Jane, Todd, Greg, all about sharing stories about what makes Wisconsin great. So catch the special road trip editions of Matt Nair on Air and the Todd Albaugh Show coming up starting tomorrow across the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up on Todd's show today, he's actually broadcasting from the studios in Racine, and he will have, he'll be talking to, I guess Aaron Zommers will be there as well, making a special appearance in Racine. You're going to want to gather around, folks. And then on Maggie Dawn, Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, will be a guest co-host. That's coming up at 4 o'clock this afternoon. The latest crop report, or ag report, I guess you could call it, is in from the USDA for Wisconsin. Clearly, there's no drought anywhere. Nobody is reporting that they're very short on topsoil moisture. In fact, 20% report surplus moisture. Corn silking is at 13%. Soybeans are 44% blooming. Oh, but why stats when we can just go right to the source? We can go right to the farm up in Lincoln County. Hans Breitenmoser is standing by. He's got his corn. He's got his oats. He's got his soybeans. And he's got his cows. Hans, good morning. How are they all doing?
And I'm full of anecdotal evidence, so I don't have any actual facts and figures, but I can tell you what's going on up here and on my little farm.
And going well so far?
Yeah, yep. So okay. We're just going to start chopping our new seedings this morning. So in other words, the hay ground that we seeded down this spring with a nurse crop of forage oats mixed with alfalfa, clover, and some grasses that we planted this spring. We are going to take a first cutting of that here today.
So that forage is that, I mean, that's quite the combination there. That sounds like, you know, like the ultimate trail mix if you're a cow. You know?
That is the ultimate trail mix if you're a cow. If you can get it early enough and so forth, it's very digestible and has lots of protein and should make some milk for us.
You ever mix peas in with your oats?
Yep, years ago we did that. We haven't done that for several years, but that's a forage crop that guys do, peas and oats. Yep.
The reason I ask is that my wife Sherry, who grew up on a farm, and occasionally there'd be oats and peas, and she'd talk about, you know, being able to go out into the field and get the peas, you know, right there out of the field. And a couple years back now, we're up to four grandkids now, but when we had our two grandsons, she showed them one time how to go out into the field, you know, amongst the oats and the peas and where to get the peas. And I tell you, every summer after that, when they'd go back to her parents' farm in Manitowoc County, they'd be like little piggies out there in the field, could not get enough of the fresh peas that were growing right there on the farm. And again, I mean, these are kids that have never lived on a farm, but when they get there, it is just so fun to watch them go, wow, these peas taste different than what comes in a can. Isn't that great?
Yeah, well, they, they are a little different, but the cows tend to like them as well. So.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, whenever the rare times that the field across the street here has some peas and oats, you might see Sherry sneaking over just to grab a little something here. Let's talk about the state budget again for a second, because, and again, the real theme here is that there's something for everybody to like and something that anybody cannot like. And there is an article in the Wisconsin State Farmer from the Gannett USA Today network. Colleen Kotke wrote it and talked about the things that were in the state budget that agriculture advocates do like that are in there. Clearly, there are things missing as well. But Hans, as you were looking at that and thinking about what the legislature ended up doing, can we start by pointing to a couple of things that were positive developments in the state budget bill?
Sure. Yeah, I think the $30 million to county conservation staff was a plus. You know, I was on the county board here in Lincoln County for 10 years, and I was on the Land Services Committee, and I know that that staff does good work. It's important work. It's the kind of work that keeps our surface water and groundwater clean, keeps erosion from happening as much, and so forth. So I think that will be for rural counties, that's going to be a real plus and a welcome addition. I think also the three new staff for DADCAP is a good thing as well, because again, you can have programs, but without staff, how do you implement them, right? So those are things that I think were really important, and I'm glad they did get done.
So there were things that were in there, but there was a food security grant, there was a CDL driver training grant program, and things like that. But I know Wisconsin Farmers Union also said that there were some missed opportunities, like excluding a Wisconsin local food purchase assistance program from consideration in the budget. Did you see as well things like that that really could have, should have been in the budget and didn't make the final cut?
Well, I think LFPA is the thing, right? I mean, that just makes sense. It makes sense on all fronts. It makes sense for, dollars spent for food security for people and money going straight to farmers. So I'm really confused as to why that didn't make it in there, because it did seem to have some bipartisan support. And so that was definitely a disappointment. One thing that I don't know enough about that I probably should is that food security grant and what that's about, because $10 million is not a small amount of money. And so one wonders if that has the potential to make up some of the, some of what we're losing with LFPA. But, it's also unfortunate, too, when you have a program that works and you have staff there, doing it and so forth. To get rid of it and start something different, that's just perplexing to me. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And what I would say to that, first, I'm going to begin by saying this is speculative on my part, but let's start with childcare. We heard about how Republicans did not want to give Governor Evers a win in terms of childcare. Why? I have no idea. But they created a different way to fund childcare, which again had some funding, but it wasn't the same. And like you said, you have to learn certain things. And I'm seeing a parallel here in the LFPA, the Local Food Purchase Assistance Program, that again is an opportunity to help strengthen local food sourcing. And instead, this food security grant program is $10 million to provide grants to nonprofit food banks in Wisconsin to buy locally grown and processed food for those in need. So, like you said, it may be similar, but the LFPA was a known thing. It was working. And if the only reason they didn't fund it is because Governor Evers wanted it, that would not be a good thing if that's true.
Well, yeah, but that also wouldn't surprise me. I mean, politics pure. But, at the risk of, trotting out cliches, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. This was a thing that was not broke. Mm-hmm. And so with this new program, I would say the devil's in the details. And it'll be interesting to understand better, where that money's going to go. Because, I mean, I feel like LFPA did a good job in getting the dollars directly to farmers and getting the food directly from farmers to people, right? So it was straightforward, it was efficient, and it checked all the boxes. And so I'm cautiously optimistic, and I don't know enough about this this food grant security deal to poo-poo it one way or the other. But if it is a situation where a lot of dollars are going to go to some distributor who happens to be located in Wisconsin but is getting food from all over and whatever else, well, then it definitely misses the mark. And we had a system that hit the mark real well. So that's what's a little frustrating for me.
So it certainly makes me want to find out who put that language in, you know, who was mm-hmm. behind it, right. What was their motivation. And again, I'm going to try to keep an open mind, but like you said, something was working already.
Yeah. Yep.
There was another story, coincidentally, also done by Colleen Kotke. I want to give her credit for this, which was about the, you know, increasing number of farmers and farm workers who are suing Bayer, the maker of Monsanto, a widely used herbicide. And obviously there are a lot of cases of cancer and things happening with workers, with farmers. But Bayer, which makes Roundup, now facing more than 180,000 lawsuits around the country, has been pushing legislation at the state level that would shield the company from liability. And they're claiming that it's not, you know, like blanket immunity, that it's just it provides some clarity in what these lawsuits are suing for. It certainly doesn't pass the smell test. In other words, I don't want to smell this because I might get cancer.
Yeah. No, that's dirty pool. I mean, if you're producing a product and there's hazards with it, then you have to be able to step up and defend it. And but to try and you know, change the rules on how the referee operates so that you don't have to defend it is total BS. And we should be calling BS on that. Roundup has been used for years and years and years. It's used a lot now. I think it's overused in my estimation. It has become this tool that farmers use, and you know, farmers are going to use the tools at their disposal because we're especially corn and beans. They're very thin margin crops and so forth. So you know, it's a herbicide that works, but I do feel like it's totally overused at this point. But beyond that, you know, this issue has, in my estimation, as much to do with, you know, big companies being able to write the rules to keep themselves protected as it does with the, you know, this particular herbicide.
Yeah. And so right now, according to the article, the label on Roundup does not include warnings about potential cancer-causing effects or requirements to use personal protective equipment beyond regular clothing. And Bayer is saying, well, without this immunity, you know, they may stop producing it and that would impact crops. But the article goes on to say, well, if Bayer stops making Roundup, what'll happen is we'll get this from China instead, where, you know, worker safety is not a thing. And we're basically just transferring, you know, our cancer. We're outsourcing our cancer, essentially, is the way it sounds, when it would just be easier to properly label your stuff.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think there's the truth in labeling is a good thing, regardless if you're talking about, you know, cigarettes or glyphosate or any other product. That to me has less to do with ag and more to do with just living in a free society where you can trust your government to do the right thing. But I mean, it, at the risk of going down a rabbit trail, Pat, I think, again, this has to do with how our politics is driven. And as long as it's driven by money, to the extent that it is, then that's when lousy legislation is going to come about, because it's coming from a bad place.
Yeah. Again, serve the people who voted for you, not the people who are giving to you.
Exactly.
I don't know
that's what it goes down to.
How we can make it any easier. And it's difficult to say what we need are more maverick Republicans who will stand up and say we should put these safety labels on, when that shouldn't be maverick behavior. That should be as bipartisan as it gets. And sadly, it is not. Hans Breitenmoser, as always, thank you so much for these stories and for all you do. You got a busy day ahead of you. Thanks so much for starting it with us.
You bet.
Well, I shouldn't say start it with us. You're like 3 hours into your day already, aren't you?
Silly. Yeah, it takes me a really long time to drink that first cup of coffee.
That's it. Yeah. Silly city boy. All right, Hans, thank you very much. A local update is coming up next for some of you. For others, we're going to have our new Way Up North segment Tuesday mornings at 7:50. And folks who are living up along Lake Superior, and we will be visiting with Jeff Renicky, Executive Director of the Friends of the Apostle Islands, and talk about Donald Trump's executive order attempting to whitewash the history of our national parks. And when we're all back together in our 8 o'clock hour, we'll be joined by Dan Schaefer and by Chad Holmes. Remember, you can follow us at upnorthnewswi.com and, of course, right here mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In a chaotic and somewhat discombobulating end to the process, Wisconsin lawmakers passed a state budget and Governor Tony Evers signed it into law at about 1:30 a.m. on July 3rd. What made this budget different from the others signed in this era of divided government is that Democratic votes were needed to pass the budget in the state Senate. Part of the reason that was made possible is because of new, fairer maps. Last November, Senate Democrats flipped four seats, shrinking the Republican majority to just an 18-15 margin. Now, candidates are already lining up to take this the rest of the way and flip the chamber. Democrat Janet Jacobson, who currently serves in the Assembly, is now running for Senate, challenging Republican Howard Markline in the 17th District. If Democrats can flip that district and one more seat, they could control the state Senate for the first time in more than 15 years. That would be a big deal for state politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
I came walking in here just a moment ago, and there was a young lady sitting here with a chicken.
It's fantastic. On the table. Kaylee High from Staley Boyd High School. What's the line of bird?
So this breed, is breed. Sue. She's a Dominique, and she's 6 years old.
Is Sue here? Does she lay eggs?
She did used to. She's too old.
So chickens go through menopause?
Yes.
Or...
Yeah,
really?
Much. Yeah, basically.
It's a postmenopausal chicken. My sisters can relate.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
In sitcoms, when someone has a problem, they just blurt it out and move on.
Well, I lost my job and my parakeet is missing. How was your day?
But the real world is different. Managing life's challenges can be overwhelming. So, what do? We get support. The Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council have mental health resources available for you at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. See how much further you can go when you take care of your mental health.
Matt Nair on air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. I'm Greg Bach, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. Lead problems in our water is something that affects us statewide, but for today, we're going to focus on Milwaukee. And this is a topic which Earl Ingram has been talking about for years now. He's spoken to countless guests, experts, and people who are affected by lead in their drinking water directly. And today is no different. You're going to be listening to a discussion that he had with Paul Schwartz, who is a lead-free water activist. And throughout the week, you're going to be hearing portions of this conversation. Today is going to be the first part, but you can hear all of it by listening to the new podcast, What's Going On with Earl Ingram.
It is more than troubling and disheartening that in a nation the wealthiest on earth, that many of our citizens, young and old, have been faced with what I think is an unconscionable reality. Again, the wealthiest nation on earth, and yet we are struggling on a daily basis with clean water. A subject matter that we plan on drilling down on in many different episodes. And I want to introduce a gentleman who is, you know, right at the apex of the conversation with lead in the water, a good friend, Paul Swartz. He's the co-founder of Campaign for Lead-Free Water. Good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great, Earl, and I appreciate this opportunity to be part of a conversation with you and with the American people about this important issue.
You know, Paul, I didn't know prior to the situation that occurred in Flint, Michigan. I don't know how many years ago that's been now, about the inherent danger that was in the water in this nation, because I always knew of our nation, one who was spending billions of dollars to make sure that water was clean all over the earth. We took an interest in that, and we thought that it was something. I mean, our nation, for the most part, was something that was really every human being should have, and that was fresh, clean water. A human right is kind of the way that our nation looked at this. Over decades, I remember as a young boy watching on television the news shows that were showing where we were in Africa and other parts of this nation, spending money to make sure that children and people got to drink lead-free water. What happened, Paul?
Well, you know, when we turn on our taps to fill up a glass of water, a baby bottle or a pot for cooking food, we don't often think that the water might be compromised because it's out of sight and out of mind. And we just assume that if there was a problem, they would tell us. And really, that's never been the case in our country. But it's a story we tell each other.
So, Paul, let's begin, because we're going to be drilling down in many episodes of this, get the lead out. Tell us a little bit about Paul Swartz. A little bit about you and how you wound up on this track.
Yeah, so like a lot of kids of my generation, and I was, you know, born in the late 50s. I came up with the rise of consciousness about all sorts of injustices and inequities in our country. And Earth Day happened. Marvin Gaye happened. And this just exploding concern about the air, water, land, food around us. And so it was sort of all around me at that time. And I remember when I was off to college, I was doing a lot of analysis about what was going on politically in the country and in our communities. And I decided to take a year off and found a Ralph Nader group working on water and found a job where I could be paid to talk. So I knocked on, learned how to knock on doors and talk to ordinary people about water in their lives and to help mobilize them and engage them on that issue. In the course of that, I went back to school, and then Ronald Reagan was elected. And I read this Project 2025 for his first term called Mandate for Leadership out of the Heritage Foundation. And in that, there were all these people who were sort of giving their calling card through their submissions to that Mandate for Leadership, saying how they would work for corporations and undermine protections that were just being put together in our country around air, land, and water. And I remember the U.S. Senate confirmation hearings for this guy, James Watt, out of Colorado, and out of this Law and Policy Center, where he said God had put us on earth to have dominion over earth and to use up all of the land and the air and the water. And that was man's right, and that he was going to take the oppressive boot heel of regulation off of the corporations all across the country. So he had married this white Christian nationalism and corporatism together. And then I listened to the hearings for the confirmation of the head of the US EPA, And it was this woman out of the same law and policy center out of Colorado. And her name was Ann Burford Gorsuch. She said the same things for the EPA and how it was too much regulation. And she decided that she was going to free Americans from these onerous things. And I thought, you know, I can finish school at any time, but I want to be in this fight for my family and my community and for our country. I decided to take it on. You know who Ann Burford Gorsuch's son is?
No, I don't.
Justice Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. She got run out of town because she embezzled money from the toxic waste cleanup fund called the Superfund. That's Justice Gorsuch's pedigree. But that's where my work really started.
So the apple didn't fall too far from the tree.
As I mentioned before, this is part one of what will be three selections from this conversation with Paul Schwartz, who is a lead-free water activist who works to make sure that our drinking water is safe. And you can listen to the entirety of this discussion by going to civicmedia.us/shows. You're going to look for What's Going On with Earl Ingram. That's his new podcast. Stick around, because after the top of the hour news break, Chad Holmes will be joining Pat to talk about his trip to Las Vegas, as well as Civic Media's political editor Dan Schaefer to break down all the news from the weekend that happened in state politics. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, I'm Greg Bach. I'll be back in 20 minutes. It's 7:59.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. President Trump is threatening to slap new tariffs on nations that buy Russian oil and gas if the Kremlin doesn't reach a ceasefire with Ukraine in 50 days, CBS's Remy Innocencio.
More than a dozen countries could face these 100% secondary tariffs on their exports to the U.S. We're talking about things with energy ties, farming ties.
There are calls for an investigation into the National Park Service response to a wildfire that tore through the Grand Canyon after it was allowed to burn for days. Thomas Sulpizio is president of the Grand Canyon Historical Society.
All we saw was billowing clouds of smoke, and the apprehension started to build.
June's Consumer Price Index will be released in moments. CBS's Jason Brooks.
Tariffs have had little effect on inflation data so far in 2025, but the Fed is anticipating those impacts to start showing up in the summer inflation readings.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.